Blog Talk Radio. Good evening and welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tennell. Tonight, I am joined by my sister, Denise, of course, and we have makeup artist Margina Dennis on the line with us tonight. Welcome to the show, Margina.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Tonight, if you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call at 914-803-4399. Again, that number is 914-803-4399. Now tonight we don't have beauty news for you, so we're just going to jump right into to the show. Margina, again, thank you for joining us. And so let's talk right now about, one, what inspired you to become a makeup artist, and just give us a little bit of introduction as to who you are.
Okay. I joined the beauty industry over 20 years ago, so back when it was a very different industry. It was something I always had an interest in. I was very artistic as a child. I painted and sketched and drew, and I just changed canvases for in all intents and purposes. So that's kind of how I jumped into it. I went through early midlife crisis, so to speak, decided I wanted to do something else. And currently I am very fortunate to do a variety of things. I have a wonderful agent here in New York City, as well as I am a member of 798 Makeup Union.
You said you started 3 years ago?
No, over 20 years ago.
Oh, 20 years ago. Okay.
I joined a union in like 2013, 2014. I joined a union. So, I mean, 2003, 2004, somewhere in there, I joined a union. So, no, I've been in for a while.
Okay. I was going to say, this is an inspiring story.
No, I am not Patrick Ta. You're like, oh my.
Well, tell me, over those 20 years, have you noticed any changes in the beauty industry? What has changed that you've noticed?
Oh, well, there's been a multitude of changes, and it's not just technology. I mean, obviously, when I started, digital was in its infancy, so it was really important for us to get it right in person, kind of the same way that we still need to do when working in film and TV. Unfortunately, I think for print, a lot of the emphasis has been taken away from that, maybe in the moment. And I say that in the moment because everybody's rushing time with money. But trust me, when they're going back and looking through those digital images, they were wondering what the makeup artist was thinking that wasn't paying attention to detail, even though
right.
they might have been rushing that person in the moment.
Right.
So I think that's what the biggest thing is, that perception that is different than somebody to just fix it in post, whereas,
mm-hmm.
you know, I learned it had to be right then because you were looking at Polaroids.
Yeah.
things being scanned in were extremely expensive. Yeah, it just was a different game. So it was a different mindset. And I know Sam Fine talks about that too, about how he learned that way, and it's still his philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you mentioned film and television, print, and you also do, you know, advertisement work. Is there one that you prefer over the other? And then also, what do you like about each?
Well, I will say this about working in a variety of areas. It kind of requires different skill set, but there's things that are overlapping. And for the longest time, this Stockland isn't the first agency I've had, but it's the first agency that's appreciated the fact that I'm so diverse. Because everyone didn't know what to do with me. They couldn't put me in a box. But the fact that I'm so diverse, because they have a diverse clientele and the type of photographers that they represent, they're able to throw me into different situations very comfortably, which is really nice. I would say probably what I prefer is I really do enjoy print work, and even though live event is very stressful, I really kind of enjoy the challenge of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it is very stressful and very challenging because you don't really get another chance for a second chance. You got to get it right then, or else everybody's going to know and see it, because it's not like there's going to be some, you know, magical commercial break and, you know, it's going to magically, you're going to be able to correct something. No, it's out there for everybody to see, and you just have to live with it. So I really do enjoy that aspect of it.
Now, do you think, you mentioned the agent, do you think it's important to be represented by an agent?
Well, I mean, for different points of my career, I didn't have an agency, and I got some of my biggest jobs during that time. So I think it's a matter of still being a good business person. I think that that some people have incorrect impression about what an agency does for you. It's kind of like a marriage, and so you go into it as a partner, but you have to work up to saying I do in a marriage, and it's the same thing to having an agent. You don't magically go to an agent and develop a career. You have to develop yourself before an agent is interested in you. And then you kind of work together to take your career to a different level within where you want to go. So when you get to that point, you should already have an idea of where you want your career to be. An agent isn't going to tell you where you should be or magically figure that out for you. They're there to guide you to the next level. So, you know, say you're at the B level and you want to be at the A level. That's what a good agent will do for you. It's get you into those, help to get you into those even better jobs than what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But you already have to be performing at a level that an agency would be interested in you. And I think that's where people get kind of tripped up.
Right, right. That's important to know, because I think, you know, sometimes people or artists, you know, maybe they've been in the business for just a few years, maybe 5 years or so, but they're not doing, you know, so they feel like they have some experience, but they're really not working at that level that you're speaking of for an agent to be even interested in them.
And right.
When you're at that level, what does that level look like? What should you be doing at that level?
Well, first off, I mean, because it is kind of odd that I am as well-rounded and I am kind of jumping around in all of these different genres. And I've actually probably done more film work in the last year and a half than I've done probably in the 15 years prior of my career. But it's just something I felt like exercising that other side of my brain. Plus, too, I like having health insurance to the union instead of having to pay a pocket for that.
Exactly.
You know, membership has its privileges. But, you know, even getting an agent, there's a stepping stone in that process, too. Obviously, you're not going to, like, go step right out the gate and be with Streeters or like, with my agent, Stockland Martel, which is the big commercial agency, there's baby steps to that too. So you really need to get a focus on what direction you want to go in with an agent. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to go that route, do some research to see where you might want, fit in eventually, and then you have to do the work. So if, say, you want to do, I'll give an easy one as an example. Like, if you want to be an artist with, like, Wilhelmina Artists, which they do a lot of e-commerce catalog, stuff like that. They're really immersed mm-hmm. in that. So then you have to start showing work that would look like that, fashion editorial, smaller catalogs, et cetera, working with people that are doing that type of work so that they can see that you have the capabilities of doing that type of work. Of course, you might not be doing Saks.com e-commerce, but at least you're working up to showing that you have the ability to do work for smaller designers and smaller catalog houses, so you can work up to that. It's not about just having a book of a bunch of tasks that are oddly styled by the neighborhood stylist. It's about showing right. work that actually looks like work and having work so that they can pitch you and try to sell you, because that's what it's about selling.
Right. Absolutely. And people always have an issue with how many pictures they should have in their books when they're doing their work.
Mm-hmm.
Is there like an mm-hmm. industry standard, like starting off, of how many pictures you should have in your book?
This is where I look at pictures. You're only as good as your last good picture. So
mm-hmm.
I try to tell artists to really try to emotionally divorce themselves from their images and look at things from the standpoint of how a client would. And if they don't have, if they can't do that, then I'm available to help them with that, because I do consulting with artists to help to shape their book and their website.
Mm-hmm.
But it's much better to have 5 strong images than 20 mediocre ones.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're always going to wonder what person's going to show up. especially if you got one in there that's really bad. And it would be like, oh, is that girl showing up today? So you want to make sure that you're representing yourself in a certain light. And also, too, depending on what type of artist you want to portray yourself as, you can also manipulate your site to portray yourself in a different light. Matter of fact, I'm going to do a blog post on that tomorrow. I'm going to take some of my own work. I'm going to do some different, like, mood boards and show how grouping your work together in certain ways can make you look more editorial, more fashion, mm-hmm. or more commercial. But it's all about what images you choose.
Yeah, let us know when you post. We'll definitely check out.
that's gonna be tomorrow's Motivational Monday post on my blog. So yeah, I've been working on that today, so that people get a better understanding, because I think sometimes they're all over the place, and you ask mm-hmm. somebody what they want to do, which I think in the beginning when you're first starting out, I encourage people, try things to see what you like, because you might try something and find that you really don't like it. We all do film and TV work. We know what kind of hours are involved in that. That's, and, time commitment. That's not for everybody.
Right.
So, yeah. So, experiment in that, in the world, if you're lucky enough to be someplace where there's some, smaller student film production going on, you might find that you might be happier, in print, where it's something that's, maybe only going on for a day or two, or maybe a week at the most, and you're done with it, and the hours are shorter.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because it is, very different. You don't have to worry about continuity and...
Right.
And, keeping your books together. Yeah, exactly. Bringing down scripts. Establishing looks daily.
Right.
you know.
Yeah.
dreaming about sleep that you're going to get when, you know, when production's done, you know, weeks later.
Right.
Yeah. So don't, I have a lot of respect for people that do that all the time. I mean, especially after the amount of film stuff that I've been doing, it's just, oh my gosh. And I've just been basically either just day playing or like switching up as a key artist with other people. I haven't been department heading. It's a lot of work.
Yeah,
so,
a lot.
You know, mad, you know, props to people that's all they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then if you're a key for my sister, oh my God, it's a lot of work.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Oh my.
Okay. All right.
But I mean, at the same time, it can be really cool. I mean, I was working on I was helping out a department head last week on a film they were doing pickups on, because they decided to add a couple of more scenes, and it was taking place in the 90s. So I got to do 90s grunge makeup, which is really great. And that's one of the things that I encourage every artist out there to do. You have to know your periods and know them correctly, because it's really important, especially if you're working in film and TV. Look at how many shows we have out right now that are taking place in different decades.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You have to know those references and know where the references fall within the decades, too, because as you know, 1970 is very different than 79, and 1960 is very different than 69, and everything in between. So, yeah, it's really important to know and understand those things so you can get it right.
And I think,
go ahead.
I was going to say, what inspired you, Margina, to do film and television?
Oh, besides getting away from Obamacare?
Yeah.
I wanted to stretch a different part of my brain, because I felt like a lot of the print work I was doing, even though, you know, it was affording me to, you know, keep a nice roof over my head, it was not inspiring, because I was doing a lot of medical, so very much real people, very clean. So I was very much getting narrowed into this almost like a box. So, you know, so people were just perceiving me as just being this one kind of dimensional person. And it became even more difficult to be able to create creative outlets for myself, because the only thing I was producing were these things. And a lot of that stuff that you're doing, you don't necessarily want to show. Or you can't show, in the case of a lot of pharmaceutical stuff, they won't allow you to use the images.
Right.
So I decided that it would be in my best interest to diversify, not just from a work standpoint. And, you know, I talked to my agent about it too, but also from a spiritual standpoint. I needed to have my soul fed in a different sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's enabled me to experience some growth that I didn't experience, that I didn't expect to experience. Because I think that continuing to grow within our industry is really important, especially if you want to, or if you aspire to go higher in your career, you have to continue to grow.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right.
Are there any basic principles or rules that you follow that helps you to be able to work in all those different areas, film and TV, print?
Yes. Knowledge is power. We're in this really fascinating, exciting, but also stressful time where technology is constantly changing. And I think for myself personally to continue to be successful is important. To keep up on what's going on with technology and also with products. And it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm constantly putting new products in my kit, but I'm also you know, staying very acutely aware if there's something that's going to make my life easier and make and simplify my job and take time off, then I'm very interested in it. But it's, you know, it's just you know, a matter of keeping up on what techniques work and you know, really having an understanding of, you know, what's going on with technology. Technology is really affecting how we do makeup. So mm-hmm. in order to stay relevant and, you know, stay in business, you need to stay on top of that or you're going to get left behind. Because if you're still doing old TV makeup from, like, the 90s, you know, early 2000s before HD, you know, we're mm-hmm. going into we're in 8K cameras now. That's not going to work.
Right.
It's just not going to work. They're going to see all that makeup.
Yeah, and there are people out there who have been around for a long time who are, you know, they're still doing that type of makeup.
Yeah. Less and less, though.
And they're teaching, you know, they're teaching others to do the same, and it's so unfortunate that, you know,
mm-hmm.
that we do have technology that's constantly changing, and it's so unfortunate that, you know, you do have all of these products out there, and you have social media, and you see some of the work of some of the artists on social media, and you wonder, because some of them are so young, you wonder where they actually learned how to do makeup.
YouTube.
Yep.
I'm just going to say it, YouTube.
Yep.
YouTube. They learned it on YouTube. But the reality is that if I went into a job doing that, 99.9% of the jobs, they would ask me to pack my kid up and leave because it's just not relevant for the
exactly.
type of work I'm doing. And, I mean, and that's in all those genres. Well, you know, you and I, you know, we know that there's certain people that are going to prefer that, but it's a 1% situation. It's not
right.
a 99% situation. So I still can do that. Matter of fact, I had to do some Instagram makeup for an editorial shoot for a magazine. It was for a rapper for his booty girls. So, you know, I was doing Insta brows and heavy highlighting and contouring and stuff. But it's because it was, you know, that's what the situation called for. So, you know, it's still important to understand how to do all these different things, but at the same time, you don't want to be a one-trick pony and only know how to do Instagram makeup because it's going to really limit your work opportunities.
Right. Now, explain to our listening audience, and for those
the Instagram
people who are going
makeup?
To catch this out on the replay, and you mentioned a little bit in your response just now, but just explain to them what Instagram makeup is.
Well, you know, everything goes in trends, and I feel like the fashion industry is kind of combating that all the way to the extreme where it's like the no makeup makeup trend. In my opinion, my definition of Instagram makeup is a very, very heavy makeup, and
mm-hmm.
it's almost like a drag version of women in some cases, which I don't really understand because to me, it kind of negates the whole purpose of makeup, which is to kind of make you more feminine
mm-hmm.
and to enhance your femininity, but to take it to an extreme where you're almost becoming this Victoria version of yourself. It's kind of mind-boggling to me. And, you know, a lot of young girls that are so beautiful making themselves look like they're 40 years old when they're like 16.
Right.
Yeah. So,
yep.
But it's just very heavy makeup, and yeah, it's just wow, okay.
Right. How important, because now that you're talking about heavy makeup, it makes me think about this, because, you know, especially when you work on projects, especially when you have you know, a bunch of extras and you get to spend time, you know, working with the background, and you notice
mm-hmm.
how some of these women have no idea about skincare, and some of them are so young. And I think back about, you know, when I was growing up, we didn't have the products that we have now. We didn't have the product
knowledge.
the product knowledge that mm-hmm. we have now. You know, we didn't have mm-hmm. the same resources that we have now. And now that we have all the resources and we have the internet and you can go online and find just about anything, and some of these young people are always online, it amazes me how, you know, when you see some of them, they have no clue about skincare. People, especially black women, it saddens me that they're using soap to cleanse their face. Mm-hmm. You know, they have breakouts.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, they have horrible breakout. You know, they've got, you know, dark spots, you know, and they don't know mm-hmm. what to do about them. And they think alcohol in a washcloth is going to cleanse their skin. It's sad.
Well, I will tell you what my experience was, because, you know, like a lot of artists, you know, I went to school and I, you know, worked in retail until I could afford to not work in retail anymore. And I will tell you what I personally have seen in that genre, and it's not just with women of color, it's across the board. A lot of people, and I don't understand why, don't want to spend the money on skincare. For whatever reason, they don't see the value in it. They rather spend it on color because it's more exciting. Yep. I think that's what it is. But they don't understand that if they don't take care of their skin, that whatever they put on top of it is not going to look good.
Exactly.
So you could do an amazing job of, like, prepping their skin really well and making it look amazing. But they're not going to get that same result at home if they're not doing that. And you could tell them that until you're blue in the face, but – you know, it could come down to money and they just want the color. I don't know. But a lot of people, they're just like, I'll take eyeshadow and a lipstick. Well, what about your skincare? Nope. Well, you came in with expressing this concern. That's going to solve your problem. Well, I really don't want to spend that money.
Right.
Yeah. And they'll just try to cover it up and then still be unhappy. And then I think also, too, some of them don't want to take the steps to take care of their skin because it is a commitment. Skincare is a commitment. It's like, well, you know, I'll just take some, you know, makeup remover wipes and call it a day, but that's not skincare. So, I feel you on that. I totally feel you on that. I mean, luckily, that's something that as a young woman, you know, my mother really instilled in me, you know, you have to take care of your skin. And my mother, you know, has always been someone that took care of her skin. So it's just something I learned from a very young age. But I don't think that everybody has afforded that, so that they don't really understand the importance of it. Mm-hmm. Like, how can that really, you know, solve any problems? Or they won't commit to a skincare regime for long enough to see results. Because, you know, it takes, 28 days to form a habit? 21 days?
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not seeing instant, you know, gratification, then they just kind of abandon it.
Right.
But, you know, that's instant gratification with makeup, though. So,
yes, it is. Cover up.
Exactly. So I really think that's where it stems from.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
It really is. It really is. What do you think every makeup artist should have in their kit? What's important for every makeup artist to have?
Oh my gosh. How many items can I list?
Whatever you want.
Okay, let's see. Well, I think, you know, since we've talked about skincare, to me, good skin prep is the basis of any good makeup application. You could get away with having some other products in your kit that other people might consider to be inferior, but if you have good skin prep that's going to make that product look good and increase the wearability, you're golden in that area. So I probably carry more skin prep than a lot of people do, but that's because I think that's the secret to, you know, the longevity of my makeup applications and also how the skin looks. So I usually will carry a few different kinds of moisturizers, and I also change up the type of moisturizer that's in my kit from season to season. So now that it's getting colder here in New York, I'm switching to things that are more designed to combat wind, the cold, the dry heat. So things that are even more emollient, you know, to help that parched skin. I usually will have some sort of oil in there too. Always an eye cream, depuffing agent, and some sort of elixir of water for the skin, and usually have two or three different formulas of foundation or concealer in my kit, just for versatility. I'm not someone that necessarily carries a liquid, because I'm like, what's the point of that? But I do usually carry a few different types of cream foundations. Usually something that's really waxy and then something that's really emollient and something that's in between. And in that way, depending on the type of skin I'm encountering, it'll work with all of it. And then, you know, of course, concealer, which is I usually always have Dermacolor in my kit because it works. And in a pinch, that could be foundation too. And I know one of the questions you'd ask me is my favorite tattoo cover. I recently discovered the Jordan tattoo cover, the Total tattoo cover. That's not alcohol activated. It's just a cream. Oh, my God, that stuff is amazing. Like, it's amazing. Wow. Yeah, you just glide it on thin layers. It's self-setting. It's amazing. I mean, you can use a sealant if you want to, but you really don't need to unless it's a lot of friction. And some really good colors. They have a kit for dark skin, and it's just really amazing. So I'm so glad that I discovered that.
Wow. So you like that a little bit better than some of the other things you've used in the past?
Well, you know, I think, you know, Skin Illustrator and stuff like that that's alcohol activated, there's a little bit of a learning curve with it for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like the Jordan there really isn't because it's already a cream instead of having to figure out that magic mixture with getting enough alcohol to get the consistency and amount of coverage you want. And, you know, you're constantly having to reactivate it, too, because alcohol evaporates. So I just, I feel like from a time standpoint, it's just, it takes less time because you're not having to constantly reactivate the product.
Right.
So, yeah. Right. Yeah. And then you also asked about anti-shun product. My favorite is from Skin, the Orchid Gel. And a lot of people don't know about Skin. Nigel's carries it now. It's Skin with two N's. Orchid Gel is amazing because it doesn't lose texture on the skin. Yeah.
Nigel's carries it now. That's good. That's good to know.
Yeah.
We were having to order actually from
Skin?
From the company. Yeah.
Yeah. But I love that. And then they have another product too that has that part. And I love it because it doesn't leave the texture. And as you know, with this camera technology, we're constantly battling seeing texture on the skin. You don't want to see powder, so we're always combating that. And, you know, there's a lot of other products in the market that I feel like either they leave texture or residue so you can't powder over them, or they end up dehydrating the skin, and then it's creating other issues where you're having to go in more often because they're not really doing the job the way you need it done. So it's like, no, now they're getting oily because they're dehydrated. So,
yeah.
I'm glad you guys like Orchid Gel too. Yeah, no, it's great. I'm so glad I discovered that. Like, I've been using Orchid Gel probably about 5-6 years now. It's been all my life. Yeah.
I've probably been using it now. Let's see.
About four years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
And just, you know, kept telling people about it, and they're like, "What are you talking about?" And I'm like,
"Right,
amazing. You gotta try it." No, they don't know. They don't know. That's why I was like, yeah.
I think it's the best anti-shine product that I've come across in a long time.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. That's why I knew that when Nigel started carrying it, there was enough of us pros out there using
exactly.
it. I was like, oh,
yeah.
No, Nigel's just carrying it. Yeah,
yeah,
starting to be known.
I used to call for it all the time, and they never had it. They would always have to, you know, order from the site, and I figured I could just do that myself. But, yeah.
Because,
mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
Nigel's will mark it up if they have to
exactly,
order it.
Exactly. No,
yeah.
it's amazing. It's amazing.
So, what
let
one
me ask you. Oh, okay, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go right. See, this is
okay.
what we do all the time. We talk.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
I mean, since we're talking about products, what's the one? And you may have said it when you said the skin, but what's one of the beauty products and beauty tools that you can't work without?
Okay. So since I didn't go into specifics on skincare, and this is a newer edition, and it's a friend of mine's product. If you guys haven't tried Water Balm yet from Sonia Roselli, you got to get that in your kit because it will change your life. And as soon as the water lotion is out, that will change your life because the Water Balm actually it's a moisturizer. It has priming elements and it's has like elixirs in it, serums, and it's safe to use under the eyes. So if you need to really downsize your kit and only carry like one thing, to me that would be the one thing to carry because it's very hydrating, but it's not heavy, and it's
mm-hmm.
got a very cooling effect when it hits the skin. And usually when I put it on people, they immediately ask me, "What'd you just put on me?"
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like they can feel their skin reacting to it. Like it feels like it got like this huge drink of water. And so
oh,
now
wow.
I've got models and actresses and stuff on the creamy crack now, as I call it. And like this
right.
stuff has changed my life. So I would say that would be the one skincare item. Now, foundation is a little hard because there's been so many good innovations within skincare. I mean, a foundation of late that's not even, I wouldn't even say like new innovations. It's like old stuff that I discovered. I probably would say overall, El Maquillage Professional out of Paris, that
mm-hmm.
bar cream is the most amazing stuff ever. I don't know how I didn't know about it years ago, even though it's been
right.
around forever.
Exactly.
I just don't know
exactly.
what I did without it.
I just
it's
discovered
amazing.
It like a couple of years ago, yeah.
Yeah. So if you got that big palette that's got all the foundation colors in it and the other one with all the color, you know.
I got a couple of the small ones.
Yeah, the metallic. I mean, you can do anything and everything with that. Face paint, you know,
mm-hmm.
body makeup because it's, you know, it's waterproof too once you set it.
Right.
It's just, I just don't know. It gives the most believable skin finish without having to work that hard. And, again, there is a learning curve to using it, as you well know, because, you know, you're now using it. And it's just about warming it up. But once you get the hang of it,
right.
it's amazing. I don't know what I've done all these years without it, honestly.
Then who did you
say
made the Water Balm?
Sonia Roselli.
Oh, Roselli.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sonia Roselli. So yeah, it's got some of the ingredients in it is like Japanese artisanal water. So
mm-hmm.
it's you know skincare out of Asia and they're you know they're very, very ahead of us in that technology.
Yes, they
so,
are.
Yeah,
yes, they are.
So yeah, she, you know, I was very happy that she decided to embark on that because it's been an amazing product. So yeah,
now,
those are some of my like little desert island things that if I just had to like if you know my kit was on fire, what I was gonna grab out of it, and of course Max Factor mascara. I was so glad of that limited edition when it came back in the States for about 6 weeks. I bought up about 5 tubes of that stuff because that is still the best mascara there is.
Wow.
Yeah. it just is. And a friend of mine was just in Paris, and I forgot to tell her to pick me up some more because she's like, do you want anything? And I was like, I don't need anything. And I was like, damn it, I should ask for masks back to Mask Sarah. But
yeah. So let's talk about your stoop scopes.
My stoop scopes.
Yeah,
scoping in my hood. Yeah, I know.
You're right.
I know.
It's getting a little too cold now. You're gonna have to start a little bonfire out there if you're gonna continue to do them out there on the stoop.
Exactly. I'm gonna have to go to the park where there is like a little bonfire and go in the park and scope the stoop scope with the dogs. Dog park,
right.
Yeah, the dog run scope then. But no, I mean, fall is my favorite time of the year, just like spring is. Because New York in the summertime can be a little hot, a little sticky, a little uncomfortable because we're a walking city. So it's, you know, and a little loud because everybody's outside. But, yeah, the fall is, you know, it's nice. It's nice and cool and crisp. And I can kind of catch up with people and talk about things and see how people are doing and answer questions. And, you know, I know you guys are aware of my other website, my Beauty.
Yes.
Which is for education and consulting and stuff. And because, you know, I want to try to give back. I feel like there is a lot of information out there, but some of the information that's out there is kind of scary. It's going to get people in trouble and possibly hurt people. So I hope that I can give people information that's going to help them on their journey, that's going to be more safe and legal. Putting weave glue on your lashes and possibly blinding someone. Yeah, exactly. So, So, yeah, trying to keep it real.
So why Periscope and not some other form of social media? And then the next question would be, how important is social media to your career?
Okay. I do also do Facebook Live. I don't do them as often, and if I do Facebook Live, I usually do them in Glossable or Glossable Pro because I'm admin of both of those groups, so I'll usually do it as a extension of the group. And Periscope, even though it's still a newer platform, you get direct response, whereas there's still lag time with Facebook Live, even though technically there's more people on there. And it's also harder for people to know that you're actually on Facebook Live doing something. So I think probably the only way around that is to decide you're going to do something at that time, like you do your beauty talk, and then advertise them and hope that somebody remembers that you're going to be on. But that also takes a lot of energy, whereas a lot of times you can just pop on Periscope, and if the people don't have the notification turned off on their phone, they're going to get an alert. Where it's Facebook Live, you don't get an alert that someone's on. You might get a notification, but it's not a sound. So if you don't see that come up, you're not going to necessarily know that somebody that you're connected to is on Facebook Live. So that's why I choose Periscope over Facebook Live most of the time. But, you know, I still check them out. It's going to work better. And certain times of the day, Facebook Live is better than Periscope is. But I feel that, you know, social media is a necessary evil, unfortunately. Even though we don't have any additional hours in the day for it, and we're still working as hard, we have to participate in it to stay relevant and to stay in people's minds. Or we'll get forgotten about. It's just another form of networking, unfortunately, and it's a different type of networking.
Right.
It's just kind of one of those necessary evils. Because even if you're not necessarily picking up clients that way, it doesn't mean they're not paying attention to what you're doing out there.
Right.
It's usually people that have already have some sort of contact with, that are more likely to notice what you're doing on social media than those that aren't familiar with you at all. And trust me, even if they're not commenting, they're seeing it, because there's been numerous times that I've been on a job and the client's like, oh, so how was Toronto? And I was like, what are you talking about? I saw you went to Toronto. They teach a class or something. And it's like, what? So they wouldn't have known it if they weren't on my social media.
Right.
That's why, and, you know, and it goes back to, you also have to be very cognizant of what you put out there, too. And I tell people this all the time. It doesn't mean that you can't show a part of your personality or part of your life, but you have to be really careful with what you put out there. So you don't want the drunken pictures falling out of the club on your social media where you're connected to clients, or to be super political, or, you know, a lot of other things, because it can affect your business. Or if you're going through a divorce, having an illness or anything like that, even though it's a good way to let people know as a whole what's going on with you, again, you're putting something out there that you might not want clients to be aware of. So you want to be very, very careful with that. But it is a necessary evil to have and use.
And how has it changed your career with social media?
This is something that I've noticed with social media personally. Since I was doing makeup before social media happened, it's something that I've had to adapt to, and it's just become an additional outlet. For some people, that's all that they know, so that's the only way they're attracting people, which is you're going to attract a different type of client that way if you're only doing social media. I would say that it's helped my career, but it's still a necessary evil that I know that I need to do. Because if you're not doing it, then clients will wonder if you're relevant or not. It doesn't mean you're going to attract more clients that way, but they're looking at that as to whether or not you're, because there's certain types of clients that have that expectation, because now we're in a time where you have more millennials that are in a position of hiring, and they expect to see you on social media.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, how important are your numbers?
Well, it depends on who you're dealing with. I have about 3,300 people almost on Instagram. I know some people think that that's not a large number.
Mm-hmm.
But for people that work within production and stuff, they're like, oh, you have 3,300 people? They know that's a lot of people.
Right.
Because, yeah, exactly. So it depends on who you're talking to. So here are my thoughts on that. If you want me to be a makeup artist, hire me as a makeup artist. If you want me to be an influencer, hire me as an influencer. If you want me to be both, then you need to pay me for both.
Right.
So, we're getting into a point where they want everything wrapped in one. And, I mean, the modeling industry is no different. That's part of the reason why you have people like Kendall and Gigi that are so popular right now. A lot of it has to do with their social media numbers. It doesn't have to do with them being such amazing models.
Right.
It has to do with how much reach they're getting. But, you know, but now they're finding out that even though people have these large numbers, it doesn't mean that the engagement and the reach is as much as they think it is, just because they have millions and millions of followers. Because I get feedback from people all the time now that see, you know, what I'm talking about in social media, whether it's on Facebook, on Instagram, or something, and they're purchasing things that I'm talking about. So I know that I'm having a greater reach than what my numbers are.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still trying to figure that out. I think it just depends on what sort of relationship you establish with your public. People know that I'm not going to recommend things or talk about things that I like unless I really like them, because I'm not taking money from anybody to say that this is fantastic.
Right.
Yeah. And there's a lot of validity in that, especially after, you know, some of the things that happened with Jack Hill and Jeffree Star, et cetera, and a lot of people not disclosing that they're being paid spokespeople, for lack of better words, on social media. So people are looking to people that are being more authentic about their product recommendations, that, you know, there's no agenda behind it.
Right.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about, and I know you mentioned it, but give a little, here's your time to plug your workshops.
Oh, my workshops. Well, I'm actually getting ready to do one next weekend. Liz Margin, who owns Sedona Beauty Team in Arizona, is actually bringing me in to do a workshop for her bridal team. So I'm going to be in Sedona, Arizona next weekend. And I've been doing education on and off for years, and I decided that I wanted to jump back in that arena because I just felt like there was a certain aspect to education that was missing, and I feel I do education in a way that's different than the way that other people do education, so I feel like I just give a different twist on it, and I've gotten that feedback as well from students that the way that I provide information and education to them is different, and I challenge them. So, you know, I'm going in to do something for her, and then just there's going to be different things on the horizon in 2017 that I can't necessarily talk about. And I have, you know, done some webinars online too that are more business related. I don't know if I'm going to continue that because people haven't really been seeing the value in that, even though that's the number one thing they seem to complain about.
Right.
which is such a disappointment to me. I just don't, and I'm not really somebody that really thinks in black and white. I know the world's very gray, so I'm having a really hard time trying to understand how people can complain about not getting paid their worth or not understanding how to run their business, but yet they don't want to pay to learn about being a good business person.
Right.
So it's not like I'm charging $500 for webinars.
Right.
Mind-boggling to me, mind-boggling. So I just don't understand that at all. So we'll see on that. I'm kind of taking a different approach to that, where I'm actually going to some of the schools and seeing if I can provide it that way, where they're either, I'm either selling them the curriculum or they're leasing the webinars for their students. So that way they get an idea of what they're getting into before they get out there. Because, you know, a lot of people are putting a horse before the cart. It's like they're a surgeon and they haven't even gone through medical school yet and learned how to cut open anybody. And then they wonder why they're, you know, they're not succeeding out there. And it's like, well, did you learn anything about the business aspect about this before you hung your shingle out? And they're like, no. Well, that's part of the problem. You know, you got to know about protecting yourself so you don't get sued, and you know, how to structure your money so that you're earning a living wage and so that this isn't a side hustle. Know about taxes and you know, even if you're doing this part-time and just bridal, you know, you got your shingle online, Uncle Sam's going to find out about you sooner or later because they know that the majority of the workforce is going freelance, and so they are hiring more people to look for their money. So, like, you don't want to get a surprise in that way because that surprise is going to put you out of business. So, yeah.
Absolutely
out of business. So, but, yeah, I just, you know, I really want people to succeed and be good business people and, you know, be able to create the life and vision that they want. And I just, you know, I think that starts with education and just, you know, knowing and have a better understanding of what goes into wages and stuff instead of looking at it from the standpoint of, oh, I'm a poor consumer, so I wouldn't want to pay more than this.
Right.
You know, you have to look at it from a different standpoint. We don't work every day. And I realize the structure is different if you're doing film and TV. So that's why I think it's also good that I understand how the different worlds work too. And I hope that I'm able to clarify that for them, because I know that can be very confusing too. And it's like, why are rates so much different between this and that? And it's like, well, because if you're doing a one-day or a two-day advertising job, that job might, you know, exist, you know, out there in the world for 6 months, even though you're working one day. Whereas, you know, you're working on a film for 6 months. You're working for 6 months.
Right.
It's, you know, and the budget, and the budget's different because it's spread out. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the easiest way that I can, you know, explain that. So it's like, so yeah, you wouldn't quote the same thing for a one-day advertising job that you would for a film that you're working on for 3 months or 6 months.
Right, exactly.
You're going to also need to know what the overall budget is for the film, too. Just like you're going to want to know what the overall budget is for the advertising job. It's like, is it national? Is it international? Is there a celebrity in it? Are they using it on social media, too? You know, is it a billboard? You know, how is it being used? Because you're only getting paid that one time. You know, you're not getting residuals like the photographer is or the model is. If there's a model in it, they're getting paid residuals because their likeness is involved. You're getting paid that one time for working behind the scenes, so you better make sure you get paid well that one time.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So. Just,
that's,
you know,
right.
That's
these
the sort of stuff I'm trying to educate people on.
Right.
Yeah.
I just think
being more concerned about bragging on social media about what they worked on. Because the bragging isn't going to keep a roof over their head. Sorry, they're going to be homeless
not.
Bragging. Homeless bragging. Oh, you worked on that, but you're living in your house.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But it's the truth. It's the truth. It's the truth.
Yeah.
It really is. What inspires you as a makeup artist?
Oh, my gosh. A lot of different things. Sometimes I get inspired by looking at other artists' work. But a lot of times, you know, I'm very blessed and fortunate to live in a very inspiring city. I mean,
mm-hmm.
The architecture, just the changing of the seasons, the coldness of the steel in the buildings, the grunginess that can happen, especially after a day like today, you know, with all these runners and there's trash everywhere, crazy, you know, graffiti covered subway cars and you know, buildings in the, you know, the outer boroughs and stuff. So there's a lot of things that can be very stimulating to the mind, the museums. Even going into fabric stores in a fashion district and looking at the texture and colors of fabric. It's just so many things, jewelry, you know, accessories, just anything. You can get inspired by different things and different textures and get really inspired to create things. And,
right.
And I think it's important to, you know, to play and not be afraid to kind of screw up. It doesn't mean you do that on a job. You do that, you know, in your spare time and, you know, mix things together. I'm constantly mixing stuff together to see what the outcome is going to be, to see what sort of
mm-hmm.
texture. And that's how we grow as artists, too. You know, because this isn't a paint-by-numbers job. You know, we're throwing curveballs all the time, so the more that we experiment and grow and learn, the more we're able to adapt and kind of go with the flow on set. When somebody decides they want something completely different, you're thinking, oh, crap, what do I have here that I can make that? You know, it's kind of like,
right.
Oh, you know, I got to cook a 3-course dinner that my husband didn't tell me about because his boss is coming over and I haven't gone to the grocery store. Let's see what the rabbit can pull out of their ass. So you just start going through the process. And our job is no different when we're put in situations like that. So that's why it's really important to experiment to know what's going to work. I was on set one day and I needed to cover up a tattoo and I didn't have tattoo cover with me, but I had Kevin Aquan Central Skin Enhancer with me and I had some setting spray.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 minutes later, that tattoo was gone. So,
you know,
and kept it moving.
And those skin enhancers are heavy, so it's perfect for
covering up. Exactly. It was all black tattoo. I was like, great. I used a little bit of Krylon Dermacolor, corrector color first on the black areas, and then covered it, and I was done. I'm like, you know, problem solved. Because I knew that was going to be faster than me just using Dermacolor, because I could have done that too. But I'm like,
yeah.
Kevin Aquan, because it's got the, you know, it's got the slip to it. I didn't have to worry about warming it up, and
mm-hmm.
it had the opacity
mm-hmm.
to it that I knew that I needed. So I'm like, let's make this happen.
But, you know, as a makeup artist, you have to be able to do those kind of things, you know. Sometimes you're just not going to have what you need and what you would like to have in your kit. And you just have to learn how to work with everything that you do have.
Or we'd be carrying 100 pounds of product around and never be able to find anything. I feel that's what separates the artist from the technicians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, having stuff in your kit that is versatile, or understanding how to make it versatile.
That's so true.
That stuff isn't just what, you know, the name is that's on it. When I was up at IMATS Toronto and I was doing demos for Blur, Liz had told me not to bring anything with me. She'd have everything. Well, I know next year when I go back up and teach for IMATS, I'm bringing a makeup kit with me, because I was put in such MacGyver situations, it wasn't even funny. I didn't have mascara at all. Like, she had a whole booth and wasn't selling any mascara in it. And even Faith Atelier was there, and they didn't even have a tester of mascara. So I'm like, how am I going to do mascara? So she had Naked Cosmetics, loose pigments. I grabbed black. She had the brow gel, that brow gel that's water resistant. I put that brow gel on a palette, mixed in that black pigment, and made mascara and just kept it moving. But
mm-hmm.
that's the sort of stuff you have to be prepared for. It's like, you know, you become a MacGyver. You know,
but you know,
we really are a solution. We're problem solvers. That's all we do all day is solve problems.
Yep. Absolutely. That's
yeah.
so true.
But yeah, I hated it. I was like, yeah, it's like, oh my God.
But
I hate it when they
tell you though, oh, you don't have, bring a light kit. You don't need much of anything, or don't bring
exactly.
a kit. And then when you get there, it's totally opposite.
Exactly. Exactly. Or I remember I was working on this commercial, and I must have asked them 5 times, are there going to be any women? Are there going to be any women? No, it's just going to be guys. It's going to be guys. I happened, and it was like the second or third day, they decided they're going to bring a woman in, and they didn't tell me or wardrobe. They didn't tell us.
Mm.
I happened to hear production talking to somebody because I went to ask a question, and they're like, well, bring your wardrobe. And I'm like, oh, my God, you're bringing a female in. What the hell are you doing? So, you know, I'm always a good Girl Scout. I had a curling iron, a blow dryer, and I had, like, some sort of, like, I had mascara and some sort of, like, small, like, you know, eyeshadow palette and, like, a lip palette. But that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was in my kit. And wardrobe's like, we don't have anything for women. And they're like, oh, she's been in a wardrobe. But they weren't even going to give us a heads up. And that's what I mean. It's like, no, I've asked you guys this question 6 times, and you said absolutely positively not. Will there be men, women? And all of a sudden you're throwing a curveball. And that's why we have to be prepared at all times for the what
yeah.
ifs. You know, some what ifs more than others. Like, I forget what it was, and somebody was like expecting me to have glitter in my kit. And I was like, that's something I'm not going to normally have in my kit. I'm sorry. Glitter is not going to be in my kit.
Right.
And even in a fashion kit, because glitter is the herpes of makeup. You know, it gets out. It can ruin everything.
Yeah.
You're throwing everything away because you just can't get rid of it. It's a gift that keeps on giving. So there's just certain things you're just not going to have, but you know, I'm like, I have other stuff sparkly, but it's not, you know, I'm not going to have glitter. So, yeah, so there's always, you know, something for emergency purposes. I have a CEO that I do quite a bit. He's male for his he does these quarterly things for the shareholders and for the people. It's like it's broadcast internationally through the company.
Mm-hmm.
I always, anytime they tell me it's just going to be him, I know there's always a possibility they're going to throw somebody else from senior management in there. So I keep like a small flat iron, one of those ionic brushes now because I can do, you know, a lot of stuff with that. The little Eve Pearl lip palette, and then and that's usually it because I have the I have my flash palette, the secondary one that's got all the blush colors in it, and then my Senna brow palette that a double as shadow. So I know I'm good if I get a woman. You know, just by adding those couple of things, you know, I'm good. Because the most important thing for the female is going to be the lipstick anyway and something for the hair. Because no female exec's going to come to work without makeup on. So all I'm doing is really touching in those areas and smoothing and making sure there's no flyaways, you know, and there's some
that's
volume. So, yeah.
That's so true. So many females don't want to, they can't leave the house without something on.
Exactly.
So you're right about that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just, you know, a matter of just being a good girl set. And lo and behold, last week when I was up there, his secretary came to me and was like, I rushed out the door. I just don't feel like myself. Is there anything you can give me? And I was like, honey, just sit down. I have some stuff. Oh, no, you don't have to put it on me. You can just give me something. I was like, no, just sit down. And I put a little blush on and a little lip on her. And she's like, thank you so much. I feel so much better. But then that's because I had, you know, my little stowaways with me. So.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of, you know, being a good Girl Scout.
Isn't that Senna brow palette so wonderful?
Oh, I love that brow palette, and I love Eugenia. She is just, I just wish I could clone her and make everybody like her, you know. There's just something about her energy. She's just
so
positive and sweet, and, you know, she really, you know, wants others to succeed too, and she's not, you know, all caught up in competition and everything, and it's just she's just really, you know, wonderful. You just want to take her and put her in your pocket because you know it's going to be like a better day.
Right.
Yeah. She's just really lovely.
Yes, I love her.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm just, you know, I'm so happy she's still plugging along after all these years too, and still creating, you know, amazing product because she's got a lot of great products. So. You know, right now that's the only thing of hers in my kit, but, you know, her cream foundation and cream blush palettes, that slip cover is really good, and she's always had, you know, good products.
Always. Yep.
Yeah. Good products, good brushes, which is another thing, good brushes. That's something that no artist, new or old, should be without. Good brushes.
Absolutely.
Who wants to have some scratchy ass brushes on their faces? When you know people sitting down in your chair, seriously. Especially they're paying you good money to work on it, and then you got some scratchy brushes on them that are poking their eyes out and making them feel uncomfortable. It should be a really good, pleasant experience for them. And good brushes, as you know, are a great investment. You're not going to be buying them every 6 months. You'll have them for years. So I'm a real big advocate of that. And I know when you're starting out, you know, you look at that price tag and you're like, put that on the Christmas list. You know, if you're getting married, instead of dishes, put that on your registry. Get some good brushes. Because you'll have those brushes in 10 years. You will have them if you're caring for them properly. They will still be taking care of you and your clients. I'm a firm believer of that. I mean, I still have some brushes, you know, that I started my career with because I invested in good brushes. Yes.
So do I. Yep.
Yeah. And you know when you're like, you go to cheap out and you're like, oh, this was just coated with some nice silicone. This thing's ready to scratch my eye out. So, invest in good brushes.
Absolutely.
It makes your job
so easier,
too. You know, they really do make your job easier. You don't have to work
They
as
really
hard.
Do. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's so true.
Yeah.
So true.
So, yeah, good brushes. So, yeah, I'm all loaded up on my Hakuhodos, which I don't use all the time because they're more fragile. Probably the staple of my kit are my London brushes at this point.
Yeah.
London brushes and some Usum and some of the Cosetti brushes. And then my newest discovery is my Kitco, which is James Mallory. He's a British makeup artist. He also has a makeup school in the UK. He has done some brushes. They're vegan brushes, but they perform like regular hair, and a lot of them feel like regular hair too. And they're just really amazing brushes with, you know, a really good price point. So just,
and
you
what
know,
are they called
find
again?
Out what works for you. The name of the company is My Kitco. He has accessories too, like really nice. He's got a brush caddy to put your brushes in front set. It's like a set bag, but for your brushes.
Right.
So they're not falling all over the place. Yeah.
I was trying to remember if I saw them at IMAX London when I was at IMAX London.
You might have. But, yeah, it's just, you know, getting those right tools together to make your job easier is, you know, so important. Just investing in that part of career. I'd rather people invest in good brushes and then just plastic palette that they're going to do 90% of their jobs with, because let's face it, you don't need all that glitter and all that color. You don't. You really don't. 90% of the jobs you're going to do, it's going to be a very basic, neutral palette.
Yeah.
That's why you just add a flash palette to it and call it a day, because that's going to, you know, take care of the rest of the things.
So
yeah.
True. I've even
and
told
just
that to
the brushes.
I've said that to, I was in one of those makeup groups, and one of the young ladies was saying something about, you know, when starting to build your kit, you know, what should I buy? And I told her, first of all, you know, get some good brushes, and don't be so concerned with name brands, like, you know, all these popular, you know, brand names, you know, cosmetic brands. Don't be so fast to jump up and buy, you know, because all of them have the same colors. You know, and you don't want to fill up your kit before you really know what you really need. You know, and I just told her some basic things that every kit should have in it, you know, and then kind of focus on what you want to do in makeup. You know, do you want to be in film and TV? Do you want to be in theater? Do you want to, you know, do print and all this stuff, you know, and then kind of focus on what
tweak
you need
from there. I'll tell you what was through my first kit, and these companies are still around. Cinema Secrets Foundation. That was one of the first things. And I had, it was the Benai Mellow Yellow, Mellow Orange. Like, I'm really dating myself now. You know, those colors. La Femme Eyeshadows and Blushes.
Oh, my God, yes.
That, exactly. That was in there, you know. And also Joe Blasco, like, The cream mascaras, you know, the cake mascaras and stuff.
Oh,
that's what was
mascara,
in black and brown, exactly. And then, you know, also the water activated liners. That's the sort of stuff that was in my kit. My first brushes were from Cinema Secrets in the art store. That's, you know, that's how it was, and also from like Brushes by Karen, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I had, and I forget where my lip colors are from. I think those are from like La Femme too. That's back in the day when they were still La Femme, because now they actually sold La Femme. Now is not what it was. I wouldn't buy anything from them now, because they're not in LA anymore. Downtown, they're not a manufacturer. It's some Chinese trading company. It's not the same thing anymore, and that just happened last year. So yeah, so it's the end of an era. End of an era. It's like no. But that's what was in my first kit.
Yeah, sounds like my kit.
And then
as
I just
built
from there. Yeah, and just built from there. But yeah, Cinema Secrets is the first foundation that I worked with. And I mean, I still pick it up occasionally. It's still a great foundation.
Yeah, I like it. I've always liked it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I just tell people, you know, when it comes to stuff like that, it's good investing, good foundation. But figure out what you're more comfortable working with. Some people like something that's more emollient. Some people like something that's more waxy. Some people like a liquid. You just have to figure out what it is that you best like working with that also works with an environment that you're working in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I like those waxier ones because they hold up. Hold up in the heat.
Yeah. Isn't it
the
truth?
They do. They hold up in the heat. They don't break down. It could be 100 degrees outside. It's not breaking down.
Not at all.
Yeah. No, not at all. So, yeah, I was like, give me that waxy foundation. It's got some substance to it.
Mm-hmm. Last question of the night. What is beauty to you?
Okay. I think beauty is just having confidence and being comfortable in your own skin. I really think beauty comes in all shape and forms. It really makes me sad, the amount of people that really think that they have to pile in all this stuff to feel beautiful.
Right.
I really hope that people can get to a point where they can kind of wake up, be thankful for being, you know, above the earth instead of below it, and
mm-hmm.
counting their blessings and feel beautiful, even with the stretch marks, the extra weight, the pimple that's popped up and everything else. And really feel good about the person they are in the inside. Because when you have such good energy and a good heart, it radiates out. And that is the most beautiful thing ever.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we love Eugenia, because that's what radiates out from her.
Absolutely.
All of that inner beauty. And she is gorgeous. That's the magic of her, is all of that that's coming out of her. Makes you just want to just pick her up and just
take her with you.
You know, give her a big, exactly. Put her in your pocket, yes. So
she's so inspiring.
Yes, she really is. She really is. I can't wait to hear how Portland was for her. So
absolutely. Well, we have enjoyed talking with you tonight. Absolutely.
I've enjoyed being on here. I really, really, really appreciate you guys having me on here.
Absolutely.
No problem.
We'll definitely do it again.
Oh, please do, because then I can tell you about all the exciting things that are going to be happening in 2017, which I know more. It's like, you know, knock on wood, I might be down your way in the summertime working on something that's in the works. So, yeah, there's some exciting things that are kind of like mulling around right now. So, you know, certain opportunities are starting to present themselves. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see where things are, you know, progressing.
Cool. Absolutely. Looking forward to hearing about it some more when you can talk about it. So
exactly. Oh, most definitely. And, yeah, thanks again for having me. It was an honor.
Absolutely. And also email us the information about the class in Arizona, and we'll announce it on the Beauty News next week.
Oh, that's a private class? I appreciate it. But I should have some other stuff coming up. So, yeah, I will definitely let you guys know. Makeup First is interested in me coming in Chicago. Blur is interested in me coming up there. Lala Beauty, the school there. Federico Beauty School that's up in Northern California is interested in me coming out and doing education. So, there are some different opportunities that might be, popping up. And Nancy Crosley over at Beauty So Clean has also expressed some interest, too, and Camaretti. So, you know, I might be coming to a city near you in 2017.
Sounds
gonna
good.
Be, you know, other people sponsoring, because, you know, education takes a lot of time. And, you know, I need to focus on my career.
Mm-hmm.
And if other people are focusing on, you know, bringing me in, then I can focus on my career and still help others. And that way it's a good balance.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Got to keep my agent happy, too.
I'm sure.
Exactly, because he's not getting a piece of their education, so got to keep him happy. It's like, hey,
right.
You got to focus on work.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, ladies, have a fantastic evening.
Absolutely, you too. And
thank you so much.
All right, have a good night.
Thank you. Let's do this again. Good night.
Well, yes, we
good
will.
Night.
Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you guys for tuning in with us tonight. We really, really appreciate it. I know we went a little late, so thank you for those who hung in there with us. We'll be back next Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So join us again next Sunday. Have a wonderful night. I know my sister has an early call time tomorrow, so I'm trying to get her off the line as well. But follow us on Facebook, Beauty Talk Online. You can follow us on Instagram at beauty_talk_media, and we're beauty_talk on Twitter. Tell a friend about tonight's show as well, and they can listen to it on the playback. It'll be ready in about 10 minutes when they go back out to Blog Talk Radio. Thank you to our listeners all over this country, but then also our listeners in London and Australia and Lagos and South Africa and all over the world. We thank you for tuning in and listening to us and supporting us. Okay, so everyone have a wonderful night and have a beautiful and blessed week. Good night, everybody.
Good night.